And many times people ask, what is the direct correlation between being busy and success? And unfortunately, there's none. The only correlation between success and something else, that something else is learning. So depending on how fast you can learn, that's how fast you grow.
Welcome to the CEO Sessions, hosted by Ben Fanning. And here's Ben.
Thanks for joining us on the show. I've got a great episode in store for you with Mahesh Thacker, who's a technology executive who's been co-founder and CEO of PhotoWeaver, and he has over 20 years of experience working at Microsoft, Amazon, Intuit, GoDaddy, and at a startup. He's part of the Marshall Goldsmith 100 Coaches family, and he has hired, coached, and transformed product and engineering leaders at some of the world's fastest growing companies. Mahesh is a visionary leader who loves building products and companies that are mission-driven and take a customer-first approach. Here's a little bit of what you'll discover in this episode. What Mahesh learned becoming an entrepreneur at the age of 11 years old, and then the inspiring and rather harrowing story of his grandparents' experience in India as refugees in 1947. You're not going to want to miss that. And then we get into the three guiding life principles that his grandparents passed down and that still influence his leadership approach today. And Mahesh tells some great stories, including what about Intuit CEO Brad Smith is actually his biggest inspiration, and then how CEOs can maximize their impact. And then we finish up this episode with what Mahesh learned on Bill Gates' last day at Microsoft. Enjoy the episode. If you're an executive at a crossroads in your career and thinking about quitting, do this before you do anything else. Head over to benfanning.com/quit to receive a free signed copy of my number one best-selling book, The Quit Alternative, The Blueprint for Creating the Job You Love Without Quitting. You'll learn the critical questions you must answer before you make such an impactful decision. Go to benfanning.com/quit to get this valuable resource for just the cost of shipping. Hey, Mahesh, welcome to the show.
Hello, Ben. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, we're going to have a great interview today. Well, let's jump right into this. So when did you become an entrepreneur?
I actually became an entrepreneur at the age of 11, Ben.
Wow, you were old at 11. Yeah.
Old and 11. Exactly. My parents supported my dream of having my own video cassette library. And there was the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey. I truly enjoyed giving those customers new movies on those weekends, the first weekend, first Friday, Saturday, Sunday, getting those new movies recorded, distributed, understanding the whole supply chain, profit and loss. By the time I was 12, 13, I truly enjoyed that. My parents definitely saw that passion in me. They even bought a little store. They invested in a store where I was running it, and I truly enjoyed that experience of bringing people what they were really bringing customers joy through these movies. And I myself, a movie buff, I enjoy watching a lot of movies, Hollywood movies, Bollywood movies, and so that was my experience back in the day, which has truly helped me learn a lot about entrepreneurship. Wow. Since my
So these are primary Bollywood movies, is that right?
So yes, we started with Bollywood, but then we also started to add a lot of Hollywood titles as well, including Terminator.
Okay, I was going to ask, so what was the biggest title that you remember? Was it Terminator, the one that moved the most?
Yeah, so there was Terminator, of course. There was Pretty Woman that moved the most. And then in India, we have a big star called Amitabh Bachchan. So a lot of his titles used to do a lot of big business, especially in the first couple of weeks of release. So this is Bombay. This is right in the heart of Bollywood. And yeah. We would have these new movies arrive at our shop by noon Friday. So then there's this work that begins, the workflows begin of trying to make copies, trying to distribute them, get it in time for the Friday evening with the customers, and then watch it all, watch the sales grow by the weekend. So people always had an option back in the day. And I'm talking, this is even before cable happened.
Wow, what an amazing experience. And what a great way to learn, like you said, supply chain, but also customer service. So let's dig in a little bit more here. What would you like others to understand about your and your family's journey from India, and how has that impacted the career that you have today?
Thank you, Ben. That's a great question there. My family has had a rich history, and I'll go back to 1947 when India was going through an ugly partition as a country. This is where my grandparents, my grandfather, grandmother, along with their three kids, lived in their own hometown. They had a well-established business. They had their home. They had their factory, and they were living a very good life. And then all of a sudden, this partition happened. When this partition happened, Ben, their factories, their shops were burned down in front of them, and they couldn't utter a word. If they did, they would be identified as people of that minority community, and their lives would be at risk. So they had to make some tough choices. Wow. They had to flee their own hometown. They had to flee everything. They had to leave everything behind. And imagine they had three kids, and the youngest was just a 1-month-old infant. They were holed up at this train station for 3 days without food, without water, with tens of thousands of other people at the train station. And you may ask, like, why were they there for 3 days? That's because every train that came was filled with people trying to flee to the other part of India, which would still be India. And after 3 days, finally, they managed to get into the train. And then they had to go through multiple trains, multiple stops. And finally, they arrived in Bombay, India. And this is August of 1947. My grandfather and grandmother started their lives from scratch. And growing up, they told me all these stories, all these incidents that happened earlier in their life, and how it taught them about life in a very unique, in a very interesting way. And I took away three guiding principles for myself. One, of course, is to be reborn, where my grandfather literally felt it was his new birth. He got a chance to start from scratch, let go of his past, forgive all those people who did whatever happened, and then start their life as if this was a new, all new opportunity, all new birth. So being reborn was his first guiding principle. The second guiding principle was basically to reinvent. And he continuously invested the time and energy that he could to reinvent and learn new skills. He started to, when he came to Bombay, Ben, he started to sell knickknacks, because he had to do something to feed the family, to put food on the table. And I was always humbled listening to his stories, that when you come new into a place where you have no connections, no knowledge, and you have to start from scratch, he did everything to the point where they started to put money aside. And he, in a few years, again managed to put his factory together. At the peak, he had 8 people working for him in Bombay, which I think was a pretty big deal, given that they came to Bombay, India, without a penny in their pocket. And he was, the third guiding principle was just renewing. He would always look to renew his mindset. And back in the day, he learned English. He learned to basically do business with some of the elite businessmen in Bombay, India. Wow. And he scaled his business that way. He was so creative. He would learn making women's handbags by himself during the day, and in the evening take classes to further improve his English speaking skills. So it was pretty impressive what he did back in the 50s and 60s. And those guiding principles continue to inspire me. And today, when I look at the challenges I face or we face, I just feel like it's nothing in comparison to what they saw and what they faced during their lifetime.
Wow. You know, this reminds me of Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism, and he does these executive retreats sometimes. One of the questions that he has is this reflection exercise that he walks people through, where he has people think about their own career from their day one, maybe like you as an entrepreneur, okay, as an 11-year-old. Uh-huh. But then, and then you're doing this right now, is he's like, think 2, 3, 4 generations beyond you. Before you, and the decisions that they made, how those impacted you, right? To give you a sense of legacy and how generational decisions impact their careers, the future ones. And now, of course, and then the other part of the exercise, as I understand it, is he has them think two or three, four generations ahead after you. Mm-hmm. How the decisions like you and I are making now impact those future generations. And it sounds like you've really gone through that in such a powerful way. Just for the listeners, the partition that happened in India, mm-hmm. if they want to go learn more about that period of India's history, what do you recommend that they go check out as an additional resource?
So what folks could do is they could just search for India Freedom and India Partition. And you will see a lot of that when the British were leaving India after 200 years of being there. That's when the partition happened. And a lot of the events that actually shook up almost the entire nation, you will learn a lot about that. And that continues to shape the way India operates even now, and how some of those regional policies have evolved in today's day and age. So that's something that'll be helpful for listeners, not just from Asia, but from around the world.
Yeah. So everyone check that out about this, but that'll even give more context on how amazing this story is. So let's fast forward to today. You know, you've learned all this, you know, from your grandfather, and this is passed down, and you know, here you are in the US. How are you applying this today in your job? How do you see it playing out?
Sure. So in my job today, I am I'm currently very passionate. I have always been passionate about small businesses, and it is quite a coincidence that when I went to work with Microsoft, mm-hmm. I basically started to work on Bing search and Bing advertising. And following Microsoft, I went to work at Amazon Marketplace because of the e-commerce work and my e-commerce background. When I started working there at Amazon, I was part of the Amazon Marketplace division, which is all about helping small and medium businesses thrive and improve their sales, improve their online presence on the Amazon Marketplace. And after that experience, I had my own startup, which is PhotoWeaver, where I became the owner of a small business myself. And here I was being an entrepreneur once again, but this time in the technology industry. During that time, Ben, something which I'll share, two things happened. One is I became a customer of Intuit QuickBooks because I had to do all the invoicing and all the accounting work for my own company. And so I, you know, as an entrepreneur, initially, a lot of things will be DIY. You cannot go hire a CFO immediately. So a lot of these things you have to learn.
I know this firsthand. I can vouch for what Mahesh is saying.
Yeah, totally. Because everything is, you got to learn everything quickly. You don't have the chance to say, I don't know. You only have the chance to say, how much time will it take for you to get from A to B? And so QuickBooks Online is something which I became a customer of. I learned and I started using the software. The next thing one of the other tools or products I used was the website. And I became a GoDaddy customer to basically buy the website product and launch my website on GoDaddy. And again, I am in this journey of being an entrepreneur myself.
You try the tool and then you go work for them.
Exactly, Ben. you're absolutely right. And so as luck may have it, fast forward 3 or 4 years in that startup, I then go to work with Intuit. And then that's where I basically, again, delve into the scenarios which I had myself encountered during my own startup experience. And then fast forward a few years from there, I'm now at GoDaddy, where I am now taking a deeper look at improving the products and the experiences that I myself have used as their customer. And I, of course, I'm a customer even today by using many of the products and services. And so that's why I feel like there's this thread of entrepreneurship and startups in me, which has been a common theme throughout my journey, whether I'm within the corporate world or outside. And that's if you look back, I also feel that's part of my DNA. My grandparents, my parents, they all had their businesses, and my father, even though he had a job, he always had his side hustle. He had over a period of time, he scaled a side hustle. So it's been in our DNA where we feel like we definitely want to be entrepreneurial in our pursuits and also continue to contribute towards the economy, if you will. my mom, and you know, my mom also is a teacher. She's been my grandma's been a teacher. My mom's a teacher. So that's the other thing. Teaching or coaching comes very naturally to me. So those are the things which I would say I've inherited, and those have been a mm-hmm. part of my DNA, and I've taken this forward with me no matter where I've gone.
You know, it's so interesting. I don't know if you know Pamé Bassey, who's the Chief Learning and Diversity Officer at Kraft Heinz.
Of course, I know her. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so interesting journey too. She's been had her own business as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and she's works in the C-suite, you know, and she's senior executive like yourself. So it's interesting, and I really enjoy talking to her about this, because when you work on and when you've worked on both sides, mm-hmm. I think it gives you a very unique perspective that companies like Amazon, like GoDaddy, really benefit from. Because as you say, like, they're serving the entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. Intuit serving the entrepreneur and the business owner. The fact that you've been there, you don't just have a corporate lens. You're actually looking at it from a recipient.
And correct.
And when you've become, I mean, one of your areas of expertise is product design, right? And mm-hmm. conceptualizing that. Mm-hmm. And since you've used the product, people forget, like, that's a pretty important part of the journey, is to have used the product to be able
totally.
To use the product, right?
Absolutely, Ben. You're absolutely right. Because when you use a product as a customer, what you gain most importantly is customer empathy. Customer empathy, or for that matter, any kind of empathy, cannot be taught. It cannot be forced upon you. So that's something that you gain as a customer, as a user. And that's also something that we encourage our organization. So at GoDaddy, we encourage all our employees to use our products as much as they can, because that's the best way to understand what your customers are experiencing. You can be on the phone with them. Yes,
yeah, so simple, but I can see people forgetting about that, right? Like, I need to be buying domains. I need to understand how to create a website. I can't just help people. I've got to actually do it to understand the full cycle and the empathetic end of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So we at GoDaddy do that. We in our products, we allow customers to buy domains, build websites, enable marketing, enable search engine optimization, being able to take payments, choose shipping. It's super rich. And you have to experience those things when you offer them, or even before you offer them to the customers, so that you truly understand, A, is it solving the problems that the customers face? And B, is it competitive enough? Is your offering or your product competitive in the market? And that gives you a much richer lens, including but not limited to customer empathy. Actually, about Pam Bassey, I think I'm impressed with her work about the 52 weeks of worship that she did.
Oh yeah, great project, and
I was just reminded of the empathy part which you mentioned, because she actually has done a lot of work on this project that she's so deeply committed to, and you can see the richness of that come into her TED talk, into her work that she does, in her book. So I'm a huge fan, and I'm a big believer in what she does, both for learning and for diversity at Heinz.
Well, we'll put Pamé's interview in the show notes here, take a look at it too. But yeah, pretty cool connection there. Mm-hmm. Small world. What advice do you have for employees who are from underrepresented groups in the C-suite and are on a mission to get there?
Underrepresented groups, I believe, are a huge part of our society. We have to begin to listen better to them. Mm. We have to understand that. Actually, one of the most important quotes is, seek to understand first before you seek to be understood.
Yes. Stephen Covey. Yeah, that's huge.
Stephen Covey.
One of the most widely read books in the world. And that is burned into my mind, yet it's so easy to forget.
Yes, it is. It is something which we have to follow for all the underrepresented groups and for the diverse groups. Because one of the fundamental beliefs which I have is that you cannot be diverse as a company, and you cannot serve a diverse group of customers if you do not appreciate your diverse group of employees. And here's an example that I tell my organization. When folks come to our website, you know how we offer them all a consistent experience. You do not differentiate based on who you are or what language you speak or what's your background. Similarly, when we hire anybody, when you bring anybody on board, and when you have them on your staff or in your company, you need to have that same open-minded approach. Only when you create these diverse group of employees will you be able to assemble a good diverse thinking organization? And only then you can cater to the diverse needs, not just of the audience within your country, but globally diverse audience. And that's something which is a very strong muscle to build as you get into the future here. The future is not just looking at a country or a continent. It's about looking at the whole globe. And if you look at some of these largely successful companies who've taken their business worldwide, you have to look at what are the things that they're doing to appreciate diversity. So when I think about these underrepresented groups, I'll give you some examples. We at GoDaddy do a phenomenal job. We have groups such as Blacks in Tech and Latinos in Tech and Entrepreneurs in Tech. What we do is we've created these employee resource groups, which brings these folks together. And it's not like it's just folks from those communities. It's for folks from all communities who are welcome to join, and they join. And they come together to discuss what are the tools available. They come together to discuss opportunities. They come together to learn and apply a thinking, a mindset together. And what you see is that these people are joined not just because of a background or a race. They're joined because they believe in the same mission. And once you unify them with that mission in mind, these resource groups can be very powerful. And that's something which I would tell the folks who want to advance in C-suite, or if they are a part of C-suite, you should create those really good, diverse resource groups to bring these folks together and then apply some of that mindset, some of that thinking to help them advance and to help them grow so that they don't feel isolated and they don't start to feel like they've been left alone or their learning is not happening continuously. That's something which I would really urge the folks and the leaders.
That makes so much sense. And it ties directly back into empathy, right? You want a diverse group of customers, right? You want diverse revenue streams from different places around the globe. You need a diverse employee population to do that. I never really heard it positioned that way before, but it makes so much sense from a business perspective. I think great advice for those that find themselves in underrepresented groups to start with your network and start with the people you know and build those relationships and find a common mission to build some support, because no one does this journey, this career journey alone.
Correct. That is so true.
Don't get out on the island and be isolated there. Seek support. So what's one trait you wish you can instill in every employee and why?
The one mantra I would wish I could instill in every employee is customer obsession.
Whoa,
I'll tell you why.
Customer service, customer obsession. Tell me about that.
Exactly. So this is something which I saw Jeff Bezos do really well at Amazon. Actually, it's one of the 14 leadership principles at Amazon. And no matter where you are from, so in any company, Ben, you'll have people from product management, engineering, program management, sales, customer, marketing. So no matter which discipline you're from, whether you're representing a US region or an Asian region or a Europe region, you essentially are doing this in the service of the customer. You can keep doing what you're good at all day, but if this is not serving the end customer, this is all going to be in vain. So when you bring people together on a combined mission, this is where when CEOs, CTOs, or CMOs, when they create a mission statement, this is where they bring people together first, and then they get them to rally behind that one single customer or customer segment that we are all serving. So when you're obsessed with making the customers' lives better, when you're obsessed with solving the problems for the customers, that's when you truly bring the power of each of these disciplines and help them all come together on this combined mission.
Yeah, it makes so much sense what you're saying, because it's about alignment. And you've got to, what are you going to align them to, right? Well, the customer, and not just the customer today, but each and every day and how they evolve. And I think that is wise counsel for the CEO or the founder, the startup, whoever it happens to be, to have that customer obsession. Because speaking from personal experience, I can create content. I can try to help people just by creating content. But if I'm not customer obsessed, I'm not truly listening and putting it in a way that could be most helpful for them.
Yeah, and exactly.
Think, you know, that is very
it may seem very simple, but it's not easy. And I'll tell you why, because even when you talk about, I want to do this in the service of customers, well, have you done enough research to understand what they are using today or what are their challenges today?
Yep.
And how do you know that? Have you validated that? Have they told you that? Or have you deciphered that based on the conversations or their data? Or what is it that you're doing to further understand, further strengthen your understanding? And even when you have products being used by millions of customers, how do you stay in touch with them to really solve what they are facing today and what they may face 6 months, a year, 2 years out? And just doing that requires a lot of thinking, a lot of strategizing. And that's where the power of customer obsession and long-term thinking comes in.
Yeah, I love it. Avoid making your decision just on gut and what you think. If you can test it, if you can get data, man, you're going to be in a much stronger position. And some great reminders there. So let's switch gears just a little bit. Let's talk about a little bit of inspiration. So over the years, what has been, I'll put it this way. What has been your biggest source of inspiration and why?
My biggest source of inspiration is a person. His name is Brad D. Smith. He is the former CEO and currently the executive chairman of Intuit. Brad always is somebody who will come across as energizing. When you meet him, you will feel energized. You will feel educated. You will feel empowered. He could do this to you in a one-on-one. And he has this superpower of doing this to you while he is talking to a 5,000, 10,000 people audience as well. You know, the audience would feel supercharged and empowered and educated when they hear from him. Because something which is amazing about Brad is that he's very humble. He truly appreciates diversity. And he's an amazing storyteller. You know how I just told you about getting your troops rallying behind one powerful mission? I saw him do this over and over again at Intuit, where he kept things simple. And every town hall, every all hands we went to with Brad, he would make these things super clear, remind us of the basics, and then bring us back to what we need to do. And then just make sure he's bringing out the best from all of us. And that's something which I think has been my biggest source of inspiration, because how in my own journey, I've been close to small businesses. A lot of the stories that came from Brad himself truly inspired me to start to appreciate small businesses more and more. Even a simple fact like small businesses contribute to approximately 50% of our US GDP. And that's huge.
Yeah.
And by no means you can ignore that. And so to continue to be of service to small businesses, to continue to be thinking outside the box and innovating, that's something that Brad just made it all possible and empowered us. So till date, where I see him doing the posts and listen to his podcasts, it just seems like he's continuing to speak with me one-on-one and energizes me and motivates me. So I will say, thank you, Brad, for being my biggest source of inspiration.
Well, shout out to Brad. And, you know, that's a real gift to one, to be a leader and have the courage to step up and lead an organization like Intuit, but to have the sense of clarity. And he probably practiced telling great stories, and leaders that tell great stories get their message across and have their message heard. Mm-hmm. And it's so important for leaders to have that sense of inner clarity so they can communicate with external clarity. And I haven't listened to Brad, but maybe I should check it out, because it'd probably be pretty helpful stuff.
Yes, it will be. And he's doing some great work with West Virginia right now. And there's a program called Ascend. So he's put out a whole bunch of good work, and he continues to do amazing work post his retirement as well. And again, he inspires us deeply within. So you should definitely check out some of his most recent podcasts that he's done.
All right. I'll put that in the show notes too.
Actually, I'll give you the name of his podcast is The Resolutionist.
The Resolutionist. Okay.
Yep. Sounds Take a look. Intriguing. It's a very good episode. Couple of episodes. Really good.
Revolutionist. Okay. So when's the time you had an unexpected twist in your career, and how did it lead to your growth or success all down the road?
The unexpected twist in my career happened super early. This was when I was all set to come here to the US. And at that time, the recession hit. The tech meltdown happened in the late 90s.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. it was a lot of uncertainty. I didn't know what was going to happen, and I didn't have a clear path, a clear next step. So at that time, Ben, I chose to invest in myself by continuing to learn new technical skills and improve my coding skills. And by doing that, and you know, at that time, these things, you won't even know if you're doing it, if you're doing the right things, if that's the best use of your time. But I basically just had known all along, and these are the values that my parents gave me about just having good knowledge, because they always taught us growing up, good knowledge is never going to be wasted. So continue to learn whenever and wherever you can. So I just took that and applied that basic back into my life. And then I continued to improve my technical skills. And fast forward a few years, I found myself working at an Intel corporation. And when I cracked that interview, when I got that biggest offer of my lifetime, I felt like all of this had come together for this day. And it was a big payoff. And I was humbled by that opportunity. I felt like it was worth the wait. And it just worked itself out in the best way possible.
Man, what a terrific story. And I loved, you know, probably during the dot-com meltdown, a lot of people are running for the hills. They're batting down the hatches, sort of locking things down. But you took it as an opportunity to double down on your skill set and yourself. And I think when we have a twist in our career or have a failure, it is tempting to sort of recoil and even hide. And it takes courage to go out there as a leader and say, okay, now's the time to invest in myself, do something new, layer in my skill set or layer in a new skill set. Mm-hmm. And you did that. And man, so it sounds like that was pretty critical in making this opportunity happen.
Yes. Intel. Yes. And yeah, wow. Exactly. And at that time that you cannot tell, but I'm glad when I look back, when I connect the dots, I can tell that it was the right thing to do at the right time when the rest of the world remained worried. Of course, I was worried, but then I just wanted to do what I could, which was in my control, and just investing in myself and learning new skills was the only thing I had in my control, which I did.
Well, that's great too, because even if it didn't pay off directly, you're investing in yourself is never truly a bad investment.
That is even true.
You don't know the ROI, and you were fortunate. It sounds like there was a big return on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's. I just love that approach as a leader. Get a simple tool to approximate your cost of turnover in 10 seconds or less. Right now, go to benfanning.com/turnover. Did you know the average cost of turnover is $235,975 per employee per year? If you're like most leaders, you don't know your number. Go to benfanning.com/turnover right now and download the simple tool to start getting a handle on this catastrophic cost. How can CEOs maximize their impact?
CEOs are very fortunate. They're very lucky people, and I'll tell you why. On an average, we meet about 10,000 people in our lifetime, and approximately we only influence 0.1%. That's how many people we end up influencing.
0.1%.
Oh man. But CEOs,
I gotta start growing this more than if that's gonna be that low. This podcast. You gotta put it on rocket ship fuel.
You might already be lucky because you have this amazing tool, this amazing podcast going on. So you'll do a lot more than that, man, I'm sure. But let's say the CEOs are lucky. The reason I call them lucky is because when they stand in front of a large audience, all of whom are employees, they are tuned in, they're engaged, they're listening, they're waiting for clarity, they're waiting for the message. So if the CEO has done an excellent job in putting that message together, there is a high chance those people will walk away feeling inspired, feeling motivated, and they'll do the right thing. And my story is coming from the day where Bill Gates was leaving Microsoft, January 2008. And this is a time when Bill Gates had worked super hard, and there were 90,000 people all tuned in at different time zones to listen to what Bill Gates had to say, even on his last day. And they made a funny video. Steve Ballmer, the next CEO, the incoming CEO, he conducted the interview. But underneath all of this was a very strong message that Bill Gates wanted to pay it forward. And during my career at Microsoft, even when Bill was a CEO, I saw him talk about giving time, giving money, giving hope. It was all about paying it forward. It was all about how was he making an impact with his philanthropic arm, with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And what I thought was, he was doing this, despite being a full-time CEO, he was doing so much with the foundation. We were all puzzled when he decided his, when he announced his departure. But then fast forward 10, 12, 15 years from there, you can see the kind of impact that he's had on the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And that's an opportunity. So on that day, 91,000 people listening and feeling like even they could do their bit by either contributing directly or indirectly, or even at least trying to walk in Bill's footsteps. That's his chance to impact. And I'm sure if even if on that day, a smaller percentage of the audience felt inspired and followed his footsteps, that's the impact that he's left on the future decades and perhaps centuries to come. And now more so through his philanthropic arm. So I just feel like CEOs have that stage. Mm-hmm. They have the opportunity to really double down that that impact through good. And they could do this while in job, because believe it or not, more and more people, both within the company and outside, employees as well as media, they are following them, they are listening them. So what they do at that time, and if they do the right thing with the right message, it's going to get to a lot of good results, not just for the company or for the shareholders, but for the society. And that's one of the best opportunities for them to make the real impact.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great point, because we often think of CEOs as highly leveraged leaders. And we say leverage because they're making decisions that make an impact in organizations and move the needle on the, you know, they impact the income statement, the balance sheet, every decision they make practically. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. what you're saying, hey, they also are highly leveraged in making a positive impact. And let's not forget that. And I'm sure every CEO can remember that, because it's probably helpful to remember that when they're getting caught up in the numbers. And also remember employees, because they can look for those points of inspiration like you have.
Correct. Correct. And they stay with you for a lifetime.
Yeah. Oh man, that's good stuff. Yeah. And a great tie back to Brad, to the impact that Brad Smith made on you.
Correct. And he, and Brad Smith continues to make that impact on the society after leaving into it.
Yep. So let's wind this thing up for a second here. Where should the users go, or the user, where should the listeners go? To download some free resources that we were talking about earlier that you think could help help them in their own journey?
Sure. I would love to share with the listeners a framework that they can use to become goal-oriented on their journey. And I would love to invite them to impeccableinterview.com. That's a place I would suggest they go to, and they can download. They can hit down, they can enter their information and hit download, and they'll get the framework that I'm talking about. Again, the website is impeccableinterview.com.
Impeccableinterview.com/download. Okay. All right. I'll make sure to get that in the show notes. So last question, what did I not ask you today? Or what are your parting thoughts for, or what's your parting thought for the listeners? If I covered everything or not?
Sure. My parting thought for the thoughts for the listeners are, is, so first of all, I would thank the listeners for their time. And I'm here, everybody, I'm sure everybody here is tuned into the podcast for a purpose. And the parting thought would be, believe in continuous learning. The world today is shifting and changing so rapidly that there's not enough time that people take out of their busy schedules to learn and to grow. And many times people ask, what is the direct correlation between being busy and success? And unfortunately, there's none. The only correlation between success and something else, that something else is learning. So depending on how fast you can learn, that's how fast you grow. So I would say, figure out a way to continuously learn and evolve and grow. And I'm a lifelong learner, and I hope you also believe in it.
Man, that's a great parting thought. There's no correlation between success and busyness, but there is between, or there is direct correlation with continuous learning. So great, great one. So, hey, Maj, thanks for coming on the show.
It is a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Ben.
Want to boost your productivity and decision-making? Get vital insights from each episode delivered directly to your inbox. A great resource, whether you've listened to the episode or not. Go to benfanning.com/insight.
Ben Fanning is a number one best-selling author, Inc. magazine columnist, and CEO of the Fanning Group, an international consultancy and corporate training company. To learn how they can help your organization, go to benfanning.com.